Hello, this is Janet Gowan of Love Letters Live, and I welcome you to another wonderful journey with me and my guest. And my guest is one of my favorites. You may remember Darren Main from the other three times he came to do a Love Letters Live presentation. And Darren is the author of many books, is a yoga teacher, is really a light in this life. And Darren, I'm just going to go to you and ask you, please, to just list the books you've done for us. And I know we're going to talk about your new one today.
Janet, it's so good to see you again.
Thank you.
Well, I have four books, and my fifth book just came out. My first book is about the Wizard of Oz as a spiritual metaphor, and it's called Spiritual Journeys Along the Yellow Brick Road.
Worth listening. Well, I I'd be hard pressed to have a favorite, really, but I was very enchanted with that whole concept, and I would encourage listeners who have not heard it to look for that on our website or on our podcasts so that they can hear you. Go ahead, and next.
I also have Yoga and the Path of the Urban Mystic, which is probably my most famous book. It's sold thousands and thousands of copies, and it's all about living as an urban mystic, living in the modern world and applying the principles of yoga, which were originally designed for ashrams and monasteries and caves, to things like cell phones and childcare and traffic jams.
Yeah, necessary transition. And I know childcare is in your life right now, too.
It is. Yes. I've got a beautiful little boy right now that I just adopted. I have a book called Inner Tranquility, which is about meditation and just a sort of basic how-to with regard to meditation. And I have a book called Hearts and Minds, Talking to Christians About Homosexuality.
I was so impressed with that.
Thank you. I was, too. But judging from some of the nasty email I got, not everybody in this world was.
No, I can understand where not everybody was.
But I got some love letters on that, and I got some love letters.
You know what? I just think the thing that impressed me about it is I think it was such a generous thing of you to do, to bother to explain to people who don't understand. I think that's a really lovely thing to do in life in general. Okay, and now your next book.
And my new book is completely different than any of the others. It's called The Yogi Entrepreneur, A Guide to Earning a Mindful Living Through Yoga.
Well, let's just dive right in and talk about that. It seems to me a really necessary skill, and the business sense and the spiritual sense don't always come together in the same people.
Exactly. Well, just a little bit about my story. I wanted to be a yoga teacher for my first yoga class. I didn't really have I didn't think I had what it took in the beginning, but I was so enchanted by the yoga.
Did you have some conception of what it took? I mean, maybe just from watching your first yoga teacher?
I mean, I knew it took standing in front of a room full of people, and that alone made me want to vomit.
What drew you to it so fast?
Say again?
What drew you to that so instantly?
Well, it was so life-changing for me.
Okay. Even just one class?
Yes, absolutely. One class, and I was like, love at first sight. It was like the first time I ever, probably since being a child, that I felt really good in my own body.
Oh, okay.
And so I really wanted to share that, and it became apparent pretty quick that to be a yoga teacher meant a life of poverty. And if I sort of got, even though I resisted it, that if I were going to teach yoga full time, and this was 20 some years ago, back when nobody knew what yoga was, I got that if I wanted to be a yoga teacher, I was going to have to balance my checkbook too.
Good for you.
And in the introduction to the book, I use the example of the superheroes and how, you know, Peter Parker and Superman, Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Or Clark Kent and Superman, or Diana Prince and Wonder Woman. You need both. And a lot of yoga teachers go into, and not just yoga teachers, many people in all sorts of healing professions, go in with this idea that I just want to be the healer. I just want to be the teacher. And they never give thought to the idea of how can I run a business? How can I market myself and be ethical? How can I do my dharma, which is your life calling, and do it in a way that is responsible and ethical and spiritually sound.
And, you know, as you're saying
And
that,
also pay the rent.
Right. I was going to say, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, if you really want to be a healer, if you are going to starve to death, ultimately, you're not going to be any good for anybody, and you won't even get to do what you want to do, that is to heal others.
Yes. Well, I believe eventually pragmatism will always win out, in the sense that eventually you need to eat. Eventually you need a safe place to sleep. Eventually you need all the basics, mm-hmm. medical care, and all these things. And so you can try to be the austere yoga teacher in the modern world. And you can do that for a while, but eventually, if you don't turn it into a mindful business, if you don't make a decent living mm-hmm. doing it, and I'm not talking about getting rich. I'm mm-hmm. talking about simply making enough to have your basic needs met.
Sure.
And those of your family, then you're going to give up and you're going to go get a job flipping hamburgers mm-hmm. or whatever will pay the rent.
So what kind of advice do you start out with? I mean, how do you approach this?
Well, my belief, and I run a teacher training program here in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and my belief is that if you try and copy someone, and I use examples of very successful yoga teachers. If you look at someone and you say, okay, this person is successful, and here's what they're doing, and I'm going to copy exactly what they're doing, you will fail miserably. Because we all have a calling. Just as doctors need to specialize, and mm-hmm. accountants mm-hmm. need to specialize, and lawyers need to specialize within their field,
mm-hmm.
yoga teachers have a calling within the field of yoga.
Of different kinds of yoga?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And even different kinds of students.
Mm-hmm.
Who do I want to work with? Do I want to work with young, athletic, perfectly healthy people? Do I want to work with people with a specific injury? Do mm-hmm. I want to work with older people, younger people? Do I want to... what is my calling? What is my feeling? And if I do that, if I really tap into that, I will be wildly successful. If I'm just
piece of actual advice.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. Lovely. Okay.
You can't go anywhere without that.
Yes.
You can't
yes.
market yourself. You can't teach a workshop
okay.
or a class or do anything and be even a little bit successful
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to be someone you're not,
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to live someone else's dharma. And so that's a big part of the book is, who am I as a teacher?
Uh-huh.
And I think that principle could be applied to any person.
Oh, yes.
Anywhere.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
As long as I'm trying to, well, I have my own podcast.
Mm-hmm. I know
and if
that.
I were trying to do love letters,
yes.
I'd fail because that's your podcast. If you were trying to do Inquire Within, you'd fail
that's
my podcast.
I must say, though,
know?
I'm really a big fan of yours. Yes. And I would, by the way, let's give your website because people really might want the joy of your podcast. Would you do that?
Well, I have a bunch of websites, but my primary website is darrenmain.com.
DarrenMain.com.
Yes, and you have no idea how many ways there are to spell Darren for some
Well, that's
reason.
Why I'm spelling it, because, you know, this medium
Maine,
is unforgiving.
Is Maine like the state?
Right.
Maine Street?
It's Maine like
Maine
primary.
Maine like the horse?
Yes. Okay.
So but if you want the podcast specifically, it's inquirewithinpodcast.com.
You want to spell that for us, please?
INQUIRE within WITHIN podcast PODCAST.com.
Okay, perfect. That's singular.
Yes.
Inquirewithinpodcast.com. So, and people can get to your other, your books and everything else about you through your primary website. So,
right.
Okay, so what do you say next? Once I have decided who I am going to reach, which group I want to work with, then what?
Well, I go and I break down different elements of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get a job? How do you lead a workshop? How do you lead a retreat? But I think the biggest thing that I love about the book is my marketing section.
Okay, that's what I want to ask, because I assume when I hear what the title is that it's going to be kind of a practical financial approach. But I can see where you're right. You have to have all these other things first. So
well, I have a section on accounting, a lot of people like to skip that. Yoga teachers hate accounting.
Okay.
We don't even like to balance our checkbook,
okay.
let alone file taxes.
So what is your marketing approach?
Well, I have this belief. We tend to think that capitalism is evil because there's all these evil companies out there doing evil things in the world. I don't. I believe that there are two things – there is capitalism and there is commercialism.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism, basic supply and demand.
Yes.
You have a need,
mm-hmm.
new pair of shoes, tight back, whatever it is. I have a product or service that will fulfill that genuine need.
Right.
And you want to buy it.
Right.
Right? I sell mm-hmm. it at a fair price, mm-hmm. and you come to me. I don't have to convince you.
Left alone, it's a lovely system,
right?
If you need,
if you're hungry and I'm selling right. food, you're going to come eat the food I give, right?
And you draw a distinction between that and commercialism.
Well, commercialism is like Coca-Cola. You don't need Coca-Cola. You don't need Budweiser beer. You don't need makeup.
Mm-hmm. I do,
right?
But go ahead.
And maybe sometimes the caffeine in that Diet Coke is pretty necessary. So they spend a fortune creating a false
yes,
need.
Yes.
That is commercialism. It's saying, in order for you to be happy, you need to buy this product.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to convince
mm-hmm.
you of something that doesn't exist naturally. And so when we look at marketing, there's two ways of doing this. I can try and manipulate you into thinking you need something that you don't.
Yes. I understand.
Which is the case when you're selling a junk product.
Right.
Or I can sell a quality product that fulfills a genuine need.
So the skill then would be...
And then it costs almost nothing.
Well, but also, just to differentiate, because I love saying things out loud, so I know that I've understood it, that the clever marketing or good marketing is to do an honest commercial, so to speak, so that you're letting people know what will really benefit them and how.
Right.
As opposed to creating a need.
And to sell a quality product that right. fulfills a need that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you take yoga.
Mm-hmm.
People need spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
People need health and healing. People need stress management.
Mm-hmm.
All these things that yoga is known for, people need. They have that need already.
So you're taking what they really need and showing them a way to satisfy it
exactly.
through what you're offering.
Now, there are other ways to satisfy those needs, too.
Sure.
I could be a massage therapist, helping you manage your stress or mm-hmm. with your healing. I could be a doctor, providing mm-hmm. you with some form of healing. Those are all genuine needs. When you look at pharmaceutical companies... They don't have to market penicillin because people need it. You have strep throat,
mm-hmm,
you need penicillin.
Mm-hmm.
They do have to market things like the little purple pill, right? They have
mm-hmm.
to create these, restless leg syndrome or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, and then they spend a fortune running these ads of people walking through fields of flowers.
Well,
and,
that's a whole other thing. Pharmaceuticals advertising, yes.
The genuine drugs that we need, they don't market. They don't need to.
So you're saying when people have a real need, there is a way to satisfy it or a way to, yes, to satisfy that need. And yoga is a way to satisfy many of our needs. So what you're saying in this book to people who want to go into this for a profession, to do this wisely, and it's here's a way you can market yourself honestly.
Right.
And as
cheaply.
You say, ethically. Yes.
Cheaply and ethically. I don't need to lie.
Yes.
I don't need to tell you you're going to burn in hell or you're going to be ugly and no one will love you if you don't take my yoga class.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What I need to say is, got a bad back? Yoga might help.
Yes.
Tai Chi might help.
Yes.
Massage might help.
Yes.
There's many
okay.
things. But yoga's one answer and it might work for you.
I like that approach. What motivated you to do this, finally, after all your other books?
The struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting to be a yoga teacher and struggling with... the business. Of,
so you're being, it's an act again of generosity in sharing what you've learned.
People ask me that. They're like, you're giving away all your trade secrets. What are you, crazy? And there again, it comes back to that idea of Dharma. Nobody can teach my class or
oh, right.
replace me.
Yes. No, I wasn't confusing them with that. I was just saying that I think it's an act of generosity for somebody to share hard-won information with others.
It can be, or that's one way of, I think of it as sort of self-serving.
How?
If I help you to become a better yoga teacher,
mm-hmm.
you're going to think, put me in higher regard,
oh,
and,
yes.
and you'll refer your students to me. You
I
won't
see.
Be afraid that I'm stealing or poaching
yes.
your students. The more secure I can help other yoga teachers
mm-hmm.
feel about their teaching, the more... It's like that rising tide lifts all boats.
Mm-hmm. Good. Oh, that's a lovely way to say it. Yes.
And also, there's a chapter on yoga teacher ethics.
Mm-hmm.
when yoga teachers behave unethically, it brings us all down. And I use the example of the Catholic Church. Most priests are decent, wonderful, awesome men who would never harm a child. But a big enough percentage, and it's a minuscule percentage, but it was a big enough percentage acted completely unethically, inappropriately, and immorally that people don't trust priests anymore. So for me to have other yoga teachers live ethically, run mindful businesses, it improves my standing in the world as a teacher.
You're part of an honorable teachers. Group. An honorable group, yes.
We don't want to be like, you know, it's like that joke, what's the difference between a dead snake in the road and a dead lawyer in the road?
I don't know.
Skid marks in front of the snake. I don't want yoga teachers to be the one without the skid marks.
Sure. Okay, that's lovely.
You know what I mean?
Yes, and this book is now
most
available.
Lawyers are awesome people, but enough of them have been bad or unethical or jerks or whatever to give the whole profession that awful reputation.
So that kind of gets back to a rising tide lifts all boats again.
Yes.
Well, thank you for telling us about it. Now, this book is available and people can find it.
Yes, it just came out. Right now it's September 2011.
Yes.
People could be listening to this, who knows when.
Oh, in ages from now, yes.
Yes, because this will be an eternal podcast.
Right, yes.
But it just came out, and it's available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all that. And it's also on all of the ebook readers. I'm a big fan of the ebook.
Oh, good, okay.
So whether you have an iPad or a Kindle or a Sony Reader or a Nook.
Take it with you.
Available on all of them.
All right. Now, there is somebody in your life who was very important to you, and you wrote a love letter to him. I plan to write a love letter to him on one of your Love Letters Live presentations. And you have something to him in this book?
Yes. Well, to backtrack, on one of the previous episodes, I don't even remember exactly which one, where I was on your show, you asked me to write a love letter. And
it
was to somebody who had passed on.
That's right.
His name is Art Leeper. And he was like my adopted grandfather. He really turned my life around. And when he died in November of 2009, I was in India, and I was very, very upset, but I couldn't, because I was in the middle of nowhere, India, I had no way of being with my family or reaching out to his wife or going to a Catholic mass. He was Catholic, and that was very important to him. He loved trains. And so I was sitting on a train chugging through somewhere in India, and I just wrote this blog post about him.
Can you read it to us?
I can.
Good. I'd like to say something about love letters to people who are no longer here with us on this earth. As long as you're still here, it's never too late to say how you feel, and it will find its way to someone important, no matter what you do with it. So I'm going to ask Darren, would you right now read this letter to Art?
Sure. Well, I decided, because of that previous podcast, to dedicate this book to him. It was my way of sort of sending him this love letter.
Yes.
And I included in the back of the book the post from the website.
Good.
So this is a little bit long, but I think you'll like it.
Go ahead,
and
I'm
all
sure.
the people that have read it so far have been moved to tears,
which I
guess is a good sign.
Yes, it is.
It's called Remembering Arthur Leeper, Somewhere in India, November 2009. In so many ways, I have been blessed with a wonderful and supportive family, both in terms of material needs as well as emotional support. My family, though not without faults, is top-notch. In fact, the only thing that I was denied with regard to family was grandparents, as all four of them had passed away before my first birthday. There are many things that parents can teach their children, but there are some things that only a family member who is a generation removed can offer. They have a wisdom that can only be garnered by many years of experience, and even at a young age, I knew that for all the blessings my family had to bestow, I still felt cheated by not having even one grandparent to whom I could turn. It was not until I met Arthur Leeper that I knew what it felt like to have a grandfather. When I was in the sixth grade, I was forced to repeat a year of school, and this resulted in my also having to repeat a year of CCD and the Roman Catholic equivalent of Sunday school. a curse, or so it seemed. In many ways, that was one of the hardest years of my young life. The loss of friends, feelings of failure, and the belief that I was stupid all contributed to a number of self-destructive behaviors. I believe that no pain or hardship is placed at her feet without the support to overcome that challenge. I didn't learn much about Jesus, the Bible, or the sacraments in CCD, but I was given two invaluable pearls of wisdom that were far more important. The first was that the angels God sends us in times of need are not always cloaked in white robes. In fact, most often they are ordinary people who stop long enough to take notice when you are in need. This was a case when I met Arthur Leeper, my CCD teacher. For whatever reason, he saw something in me that few others could. He took a liking to me and always seemed to see my potential, even when I couldn't see it myself. When I was in school for social work, I read a study in which highly successful and well-adjusted adults who had experienced extreme abuse as children were surveyed. The researchers were trying to find out what these people had in common that allowed them to transcend the brutality of their past when so few others are able to. Although all of their stories were quite different, they all had one very important thing in common. All of them could identify at least one adult in their childhood who believed in them and who looked out for them. That adult, be it a family member, teacher, priest, or rabbi, was an anchor of sorts and allowed the child to weather the storm and ultimately flourish as an adult. Although my childhood was not traumatic when compared to the experiences of many, Arthur Leeper was my anchor during one of the most difficult times in my life. Arthur also taught me my first mantra. Typically, a mantra is a sacred word in an ancient language that is repeated over and over to keep guiding the mind back to its spiritual center. His mantra was more simple than that, however. It didn't matter what Christian principle he was trying to teach. He always reminded us that to practice the teachings of Jesus was difficult because it was not in our nature to do so. Over and over again, he would say, "It goes against the grain." Whether turning the other cheek, caring for the needy, practicing forgiveness, or putting the needs of others ahead of our own selfish desires, he always reminded us that to do these things was often challenging, but that we had the power to choose. Over the years, when I have found myself in moral quandaries or struggling to be a compassionate, mindful yoga teacher, Art's mantra has echoed in my head. A few months ago, Art learned that he had leukemia. Unfortunately, none of the available treatments were effective, and he had passed away earlier this week. I learned the news via email from my sister-in-law while still in Rishikesh, India. At first, I was in shock, and being so far away from my family, was having trouble finding a way to honor his passing. Had I been in the USA, I would certainly have attended a Catholic Mass, but since Catholic churches are rare in India, I felt like a tiny boat lost at sea. I wasn't sure how to grieve. Art was more than just a CCD teacher to me. After the school year ended, we maintained a friendship. It was Arthur who taught me to navigate the subway system in Boston, and ultimately became my sponsor when I received the Catholic sacrament of confirmation. One summer, while I was a camp counselor in Maine, he and my brother drove up to surprise me, and arrived on the day I was feeling most homesick. Art gave me my first lessons in public speaking, loaned me money for my first yoga teacher training, and came to visit me when I was in the ashram so I would not be alone for Thanksgiving. He even managed to bring my father along for the ride, which was nothing short of a miracle. Although he didn't always understand my ways, he never failed to support me. It didn't matter that I was a yoga teacher rather than a Catholic priest, or that I dated boys instead of girls. It didn't matter to him that I lived on the West Coast and rarely got to see him. He was always there with his characteristic crooked smile and quirky laugh. His friendship extended to the rest of my family as well. He was very supportive of my parents when they divorced. In recent years, he and his wife Mary regularly joined our family for holiday meals. In addition to his family, Art loved two things in this world. The first was his Catholic faith. The second was trains. He loved to take trains anywhere and everywhere. He built model trains by hand and had many of the Amtrak lines and schedules committed to memory. Given that I felt so removed from my family and couldn't find a Catholic church where I could honor him, I felt as though I were letting him down. But fate has an interesting way of giving us what we need. As I write this, I'm on a train chugging through India with tears pouring down my face. It doesn't seem to matter that I'm surrounded by a bunch of Indians who clearly think I have lost my mind, because this is the perfect place to reflect on the blessing of having known Arthur Leeper. It is because of him that I am here today, that I get to travel to far-off countries and to teach yoga. It is because of him that I was able to find my way around the very congested Haridwar train station this morning. And it is because of him that I occasionally make the right choices in life, even when it goes against the grain to do so. Life won't be the same without Arthur. But I do know that he will be with me each time I ride a train or reflect on the true meaning of family. I hope and pray that I can follow his example and rise above my ego long enough to see the potential in a stranger, even when they are struggling to see it in themselves. Thank you, Arthur, for being the grandfather. Sorry.
It's okay.
Thank you, Arthur, for being the grandfather I never had, the angel I most needed, and a lifelong friend. I will miss you deeply.
Oh, that is so nice, and I can see why people are moved to tears, and I can see why you're crying right now as you read that. And isn't
you know,
that,
I've read that like a million times now, especially editing it for the book.
And wrote it.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I was a mess on the train writing it.
Well, you know something, when you said people looked at you as if you lost your mind, you know, when somebody who's that close to us dies, they do take a little part of at least our hearts with them.
Yeah.
And how do people kind of stay with us forever, stay alive forever, don't disappear in death?
Yeah.
It's because we remember them and we talk about them and we pass them on down the line to the rest of the world. And you've done such a beautiful job of that.
In that essay, for whoever reads it,
yes,
they will know something of Art Leeper.
Yes, and they will also know something of you, which I think is another beautiful part of writing a love letter and leaving it behind you. This is part of your legacy.
Yeah.
So much that you've done is, but this letter is also. And, that's such a nice thing to do. And people will learn about you, how capable you are of loving deeply.
Hmm.
And what makes a person more success than that, I don't know. So thank you, dear, for doing this with me. And I'm just eager to have you come back and talk about something else someday. Maybe you'll talk about
adopting.
I'll just
have to write another book for you.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe I could invite you to come back and talk about being a daddy.
I would love that.
Of a 2-year-old. So let's just make a date for that. And meanwhile, I will tell our listeners goodbye for now. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, I think you can hear with my guests all the time that writing a love letter is a special occasion. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye.